Welcome to the Movies on the Brain podcast. I am one of your hosts, Brian C. Wood, and with me tonight is my co-host, as always,
Chad Mintz.
Welcome to another weird, wild, and wacky week in the world of genre movie news. As you can tell, we are not in our normal hideaway, but rather on our way home from a fantastic, wonderful, epic three-star match. That was the Wonder Woman movie. Chad, what did you think of our pre-screening audience?
What, the audience itself?
Yes, the size of the audience and the anticipation level and the line around the building.
Yeah, when we got there, the line was around the building, at least at the corner. But yeah, there was more people there than I expected, but I expected a lot. I thought the theater would have been full, but you know, I couldn't really tell the way that thing was set up. I didn't know how many were up high and how many were down low.
Yeah, it's the new extended aisle, big recliner seats. So, yeah. And I didn't see a sign indicating capacity anywhere. So.
Yeah, I didn't see one either. But I was surprised by the diversity of the crowd. Because not only were there, you're normally going to have, folks like us that are 18 to 35-year-old guys. Because it's a comic book movie, but there were a lot of girls. There were a lot of girls of color, which really struck me. And there were a lot of, I'm going to say, older people. And when I mean older people, I don't mean like people like my mom's age. Not saying my mom's old, but like my grandparents' age. They were like,
we're in line for Wonder Woman.
Yeah, they're like, these people like have to be pushing 70. And there were more than just a few of them. There were like, every time I turned around the corner, there was like another group of them. So I was really, really surprised by that. So that's all very encouraging to see if we got that group of people for this screening. I think that bodes well for the actual release.
Yeah, I think their target demos were met, for sure. And I think that they put on a really good show.
It was really, really good. I'm not surprised because I was expecting it to be good. I'm just happy that my expectations were met. Because that's always the problem with these movies. Get the expectations up. Don't always get met, but this one, is what we've been saying, it's at least a 3-star match. Some will say it's better. I think it's probably a little bit better than that.
I'd say, I think it's a 4-star match.
Yeah.
It's kind of that, it's kind of that match at WrestleMania that you don't see coming, that, surprise takes everybody by surprise and is the one that people are talking about the next day.
Yeah, I think people will be talking about this when they see it. And we're getting ahead of ourselves, but I think it'll have a little bit of leg. So let me see how it does when we get to that point.
You mean the fact that it would decapitate a Transformer?
It won't decapitate a Transformer. Transformers come back. There's enough space between this and Transformers that Transformers is fine. It'll be number one. But I forget what's coming the week after it. That one might be in trouble.
Okay. Good to know. Just like, Guy Ritchie's King Arthur was kind of in trouble after the week after Guardians.
That one was in trouble before that. It was DOA, Dead on Arrival.
$15 million, Chad. Which is also a Warner Brothers movie, by the way.
Yeah, that movie is what kept me from going off the ledge about Wonder Woman's marketing, because they didn't start promoting that one until relatively around the same amount of time. But you can tell they put their money behind Wonder Woman as opposed to this one that was like, okay, we got to start marketing for this movie now, but we're only going to do what we need to do. We're not going to like go the extra mile because we already know it's dead. Wonder Woman, they're like, nope, we need this money.
And we will wait to put standees in theaters.
they put the last time we talked about this, the day after, they put the standee up. So it was like, at this point, about 3 weeks ago. It was the Monday right after Guardians.
So Chad, we have a female-led superhero movie that is out in the world, or will soon be out in the world, led by a female director, who is the second female director on said picture. Let us take a moment to sadly reflect and pause and remember the fact that another female director was attached to this movie, yet was not allowed to see it through to her creative freedom because she wanted a talking tiger.
We don't know it's because she wanted a talking tiger only. That's just my running joke, just so nobody gets their panties in a bunch. But it was because she wanted that stupid tiger. After seeing this movie, talking tigers in this one. And after seeing this movie, I think they've made the right choice with Patty Jenkins.
All right, so let's get into some of the movies, the good and the bad and the not so good. What do we think of the really quick exposition backstory? Because I was expecting it to take a lot more of the film, and it really doesn't. Like, Steve Trevor is, like, crash landing in, like, the first 10 minutes of the movie.
Yeah. It goes kind of, well, for my good, I'll just start with my good. I really, really like Gal Gadot. And I have to say that because this whole time I've been like, I don't know. I have no idea. I liked it in Batman vs. Superman. She said 16 things. I don't know how she's going to handle this movie. And I sat there and I was smiling the whole time, every time she's on screen, and because she's really charming and she has to portray innocence of Diana at first and then like also be this fierce warrior person when she needs to, but also be really compassionate at the end. And she was able to pull all that off, and quite frankly, I'm shocked. I walked out of there like, yep, that's Wonder Woman. I don't know who else you would have got. It just, that's her. So I have to say that because this whole time I've been like, I just don't know.
Is it not fair to say that we thought the same things about Chris Evans?
Well,
prior to Captain America: The First Avenger, like his cap had never been visualized on screen before. He is and the comparisons are going to be there all the time because of the period piece, past and present, future construction of the movie. But I mean, no one really looked at Chris Evans as the guy who played the Human Torch in Fantastic Four when that dude's gonna be the definition of Captain America.
No, I do remember loud and clear, like when they said Chris Evans is gonna be Captain America, I'm like, him? Because up until that point, all Human Torch is like the best example of the type of character Chris Evans played. The difference is that Chris Evans had like been doing a whole bunch of things, and while nobody didn't think he could pull off Captain America, it's because of the roles he played. The thing with Gal was the roles she's had, she's been very limited in her acting. So it was not even a question of why did they put him there, because we haven't seen her do these kind of roles. Just like, can she even act? And that's been the big question with her. And again, I've seen 5 minutes of her in a Fast and the Furious movie, and I've seen her in Batman vs. Superman, and I've seen her in this, and I loved her in this. So I can't really go off of everything else, but I don't think it's quite an apples-to-apples comparison with Chris Evans, but I know when he was cast, everybody was saying, why him for Captain America?
And I think, she holds her own. She oozes charisma. Her and Pine work really well together. They sell that angle of the match really, really well.
Yeah, Chris Pine is really good in this too, and I'm glad he'll be another big blockbuster movie and people will like appreciate him because he's really good at it.
Let us have the moment of silence for the Star Trek franchise that had its first Star Trek type movie in a very long time, and it died at the box office. So that Star Trek 4 is kind of on the back burner.
I mean, are we really surprised that you phrased it as a Star Trek movie, and lots of people think Star Trek is just boring? And they liked J.J. Abrams movies because they were, like, not Star Trek.
Star Wars?
Yeah. and you give them a Star Trek movie and people are like, it's boring. I don't want to see it. I still haven't seen the third one. I'm just saying what other people say. These are not my feelings.
So, I mean, I think that he sells that really, really well. the charisma, the charm, you know, and she's playing the fish out of water naivete role very well.
Yeah, and he's charming the minute he steps foot on screen, and just carries that all the way through. I don't know, I'll save some for other things, but those are like the really, really standout things. Oh, well, because we are talking about DC and people's big gripe with DC is that their heroes aren't heroic.
They make a point to make her stand out. They make a point to portray her as not being deconstructed, but rather living up to the mantle of what heroism is, and her insulting other people because they are not living up to what heroism is.
It's just like, hey, look, this is what needs to be done. If you ain't gonna do it, I'm gonna do it. And it's, I mean, she does other things, but that particular scene is like it is the hero scene.
Yeah, and, well, it's the hero scene because they go and they save an entire town.
Yeah. They
do it, and one of the things that I love about that scene is the fact that they call it No Man's Land.
Yeah.
And he very specifically says, we've been fighting here for a year because no man can cross this area. Like, it is impossible because they have a machine gun and we're all going to die.
Yeah, we have not gained an inch since we got right here.
Right. And then she's like, well, I will. And, of course, she's not a man, and she's a woman, and she crosses that Rubicon.
Yep, and she takes a whole goddamn town back.
And takes a church out.
Yep, and takes a church out. It's a great scene, and it is the scene that's probably going to put heroics back in D.C. So, I mean, we still have to see what happens with the rest of these movies, but this is a good start, or restart, as it were.
What is your not so good?
I mean, it. There were points where, you know, it felt a little long.
Like it dragged?
Yeah, there's points where it dragged, and then there's some stuff that, I won't say ham-fisted, but they're like, they're not trying to be cute about what they're trying to say or what they're trying to do. Like some of the stuff at the end within the fight with Ares, it's like, no, we're not going to be subtle at all. This is what we're telling you exactly what we want you to know. And, you know, it's fine, but I think they could have done it a little bit better, but it's nothing to take away from the movie.
You know, you mean the I am your father moments?
He didn't say I'm your father. He basically said I am your brother. I'm interested to see how hardcore DC fans are going to take that, because this is, they start the movie, okay, spoilers, if we have to say this, but, you know, spoilers, but they start the movie off with the classic Wonder Woman origin, is that Hippolyta, her mother, makes her out of clay and asks Zeus to bring her to life, and he does, and by the time we get to the end of the movie, we find out that no, Diana is a god because she is Zeus's kid. And that is more of the New 52 direction. And I know a lot of people don't like that. So I'm interested to see how they will take that when we get to it.
Because they did both.
Which I think they started off to ease people into it. I mean, it is a big reveal, but I really think they put that made of clay to ease people into it. Like, yes, this is what you know. This is what you know. But we're going to change it right now. But you've liked everything so far, so you're going to give us this, right? I think that's kind of what they're aiming for. It'll be interesting what they think. I don't think anybody's going to hate the movie because of that. They might just not like that.
And what was your not so good? Or your bad, actually?
I don't have a lot of bad.
Lasso of Truth is not in your bad?
No, not per se. There are some effect scenes that are like Okay, come on. You could have done a little bit better. There was one in the at the end in particular.
Now, that could have been... some of that could have just been us being closer to the screen. And our angle on the...
True, but this lap... It's... when I watch it again, I'll be able to see. But there's one at the very end. It's like, clearly...
Yes.
She's standing on the green screen.
Yeah.
Clearly.
Yeah.
And it looks like a reshoot because it doesn't... the scene is still the same, but it doesn't fit the way all the rest of them look around it.
And the fact that London looks like Paris. Or that Paris looks like London.
Well, yeah, Paris does look like London, but, you know, hey. There's going to be... There's those visual things that are nitpicky. We kind of got a little bit of the, you know, big battle at the end that we've had. Like, particularly in...
had a lot of the Doomsday fight feel to it, didn't it?
It did, but what made me forgive it is the fact that, you know, all this time I thought they were going to make Ares this big, huge, just CGI character, and they didn't. He was still restricted to, like, man size.
Yeah, he did. Aragorn.
Yeah, and, like, even to the fact that they didn't even give him, like, a CGI face... He was just regular David Thewlis.
They even threw a shot in of him carving out eyeballs.
Yeah, he carved out eyeballs. And at that point, I thought it was just going to be like, okay, we're just going to have the helmet with the shadow and just the eyes. But no, they show him, and I hated that he had that stupid mustache. But other than that...
Do you hate the fact that he kept talking the entire time?
No, I didn't mind that. You're the God of War, and you're corrupting humans, and you're trying to corrupt your sister, and you've been gone for a long time. It seems like he would talk a lot.
Which is still kind of messed up.
But I can get by it.
Okay, so my good. I absolutely 100% love Gal Gadot's performance on this. Really makes... It really takes everything that we liked about Wonder Woman in those 16 scenes and just amplifies it and grows it and makes it her own. And she is carried a little bit by Pine, who she spends 3/4 of the movie with. She's witty, she's funny, she's compassionate, she shows heart. She embodies what you would think of when you think of Wonder Woman in a way that really the only other person to portray the role is Linda Carter in that way. So, I really love the performance, I love the strength, I love the power, you know, and physically, I mean, I know all the guys gave her a hard time about how small she was when she was announced, thinking, is this really the person who's going to take on Wonder Woman? But, I mean, we deal in sports all the time with guys who show up to LSU as scrawny little 17-year-olds, 18-year-olds, by the time they leave Tommy Moffitt's work program, you know, they're... giant human beings at 22, so or 21. So, I mean, you can put on weight. That's not really an issue. And you can put on muscle. And she did that. And she embodied the character, I thought, perfectly. And kudos to Pine for basically taking his Captain Kirk role and just bringing it to World War I. The charisma, the charm, the wit, the heart, the noble ideals of sacrifice all worked really, really well. I also like the Lasso of Truth because it is like the goofiest thing that Wonder Woman has, as most superheroes have the one kind of goofy power set. It's not the goofiest thing, but like Talking Tigers is the goofiest.
No, that damn Invisible Jet is the goofiest.
Hey, you forget, sir, that Zack Snyder posted a picture to Instagram of the InvisiJet. So she has the InvisiJet. It might make an appearance in Justice League.
That thing never needs to happen. Ever.
That thing is a picture on Instagram. He took a picture of a field and told us the Invisible Jet was there.
And I know somebody ran with that, and I laugh at them. And I applaud him for doing it.
So... I think that was, for as silly as it is to utilize it in that way and to have it be a major plot device at the end, was, I thought, a really nice touch. My not so good, Okay, so we're making a movie about female empowerment and independence, and yet we still have to have the big romantic kiss and the makeout scene, and we still have to have the implications, the sexual innuendos, and the bouncing wow-wow before they go off to war. Like, really? We still have to have them do that, like, in the 21st century? She can't just, like, care for him deeply. She has to bone him. Like, really? We're not past that point in society?
I agree. They didn't need that. They could have done everything else they did and took that out.
And they didn't really earn it.
Well, I think that was kind of the thing. That they're not... When they did it, yeah, they could have done... They did it. And it's not the worst, but... The whole point is that, you know, she's learning about men and, well, just society as a whole. And it makes sense that she would care deeply for him and probably eventually in that way. But she's still
not getting to that point. Not within 5 days of being him.
Yeah. Like, if he would have... Because at first it looked like he was going to leave the room. And I think if he'd have left the room... That was the play they should have made, and him being like having more sense of regret when he goes off his final time.
Right.
I think that would have been a better way to go.
So my not so good. Chad. There was a we get to introduce to Diana Prince in Justice League, or in Dawn of Justice, which is a Justice League prequel. And she says that for 100-something years, she was spoiled on mankind. She thought we were horrible people, not worth her time, energy, or effort. And so she walked away from us. And yet, Chad, at the end of this movie, we see her in modern day saying that that she never stopped. She kept fighting. She presses on because the love of Steve Trevor buoys her to protect the innocent and care for the young. So, Chad, how did she walk away for 100 years? What made her walk away for 100 years? Or did she walk away for 100 years? Because you cannot simply say that I walked away for 100 years, mankind spoiled me. Oh, wait, now I've seen Superman lay down his life, so now that I believe in mankind's goodness again, so we will do this. We will put a team together and go defend justice.
Okay, so the failure in your argument is that, you know, you said you cannot just say that I was gone for 100-some-odd years and then come back in this next movie and be like, I fought on.
It is the same as Metachlorians. You live on for like 3 movies talking about the Force is this mythic thing that it's an energy thing that people can tap into, and it takes no special ability or power. You don't have to be born into the Force. The Force is one. You are one with the Force, and the Force is with you. This is the way that they created this thing, and it's part of the reason why Star Wars became so ingrained in the culture, because every nerd believed that they could be a part of the Force without having to be a 6'2", 220 jock. Then George Lucas comes back with the prequels and say, no, sir, it's a blood disorder. It is a blood disorder. Your metachlorian count is way too high, sir. You have a bigger metachlorian count than Yoda. You are definitely something wrong with you.
Well,
so you cannot simply just say, I walked away from mankind. And then I saw this guy, like, get killed on the spike of Doomsday. And it moved me. And I saw Lois Lane cradle his head. And it moved me. And now I believe in mankind again. And me, together with you, also bitter old man who nearly murders people, that we will together restart justice, restore justice to the world, because I have seen that goodness is still, the light of man's soul is still there.
So, much like your midichlorians point, yes, the prequels did say you have midichlorians and you messed up the whole feng shui of the Force. But also, you've seen The Force Awakens,
There's no mention of midichlorians.
None. And there's
and if there is a mention of midichlorians in Last Jedi, and that Rey has a midichlorian count that's like above Anakin's.
No. There's not. We both know from here on out nobody's going to say the word midichlorians. However, we know that midichlorians exist, and it was said in the prequels. But we choose to ignore them because it makes for a better story. Well, that's what we have here. Batman vs. Superman was to take us one direction. It came out, and everybody was like, nope, we don't want this. We've been saying since last May, since when they did that...
The set visit,
that they've been in redirect mode.
But there's a mythology, and you have world building, and you lay down the foundations for your world in a movie that is a Justice League prequel.
And I will tell you again, those are just words. You can forget the words. The only thing we cannot take back is that we kill Superman. Because you saw that, we can't take that one back.
But they wanted to do that. They've been wanting to do it for 25 years.
That doesn't mean it's not stupid. And it doesn't mean that they don't realize after it's like that kid that just wants to touch the fire. You tell them not to touch the fire, and they touch the fire, and they get burned, and they're like, oh, I shouldn't touch the fire. I realize that now. Well, they touch the fire, and they're like, damn, I shouldn't touch the fire. Now I gotta go back and fix this stuff. Some of the stuff they gotta fix, some of it they're just gonna ignore. That leaving for 150 years, done. Ignored. Those are just words. You will forget words. Most of you have only seen Batman vs. Superman once and don't remember that she said it. Words.
I remember that she said it, Chad.
You also remember a lot of things that are getting ignored. And you just gotta come to deal. You gotta come to grips with those.
Pepper Potts is gonna be in Infinity War as Rescue. Anyway. So, that's my not so good. That's my bad. I mean, like, the inconsistency of just, like, so, in theory, if you take the 150 years away, in theory, she was just boarding a Turkish Airlines flight, found out something bad was going on, and decided that she needed to go and stop it. She wasn't moved by Superman's actions. She wasn't, being, you know, weary of man. She didn't turn around and go back to Thessalonica and cradle herself away from mankind for the next 150 years. If you take that off the table, then all she did was she's been involved in every great conflict in the last 150 years, and the only reason she was about to miss this one with Doomsday was because she was going to get on a Turkish Airlines flight.
Yep.
That is far less compelling. That is far less compelling than, I have been moved now. I have been moved by this man sacrificing his life for the people. And now I'm going to get together with a man who nearly murders people. And we're going to bring justice back.
But the theme of this movie, and this story, is that, you know,
there is light in it. There is good in him. I know it.
That love and compassion is needed to defeat these dark forces. So you can't have this character that's all love and compassion, and at the end of it just be bitter and be like, I'm done with you. Because that defeats the purpose of love and passion.
So that must mean that something got changed between when they were filming Dawn of Justice and when they were filming Wonder Woman.
What changed was Batman vs. Superman came out. But I think they could have done it. What they probably envisioned at the end was that she still had the love and compassion, but seeing, you know, Steve, again, spoilers, to save everyone else, Steve sacrifices himself. And because of that act and seeing the darkness, and she saw the darkness of mankind, she realized that she needed love and compassion to defeat it. But that act was what made her step away. They could have. That's probably what was intended.
So you think that Zach wanted to do the whole Spider-Man 2 thing? the whole I can't, or the Spider-Man 1 thing. I can't be with Mary Jane, because if I'm with Mary Jane, she becomes at risk, and if I ever lost her, things would, you know, my enemies would have a weak spot for me to target, and then I would be at risk the entire time. You think he wanted to go down the road of, I loved once, and that love is now gone. He was taken away from me by war, and by hatred, and by greed, and the arrogance of man. And so, in order for me to protect myself and to protect my heart, I must step away from mankind.
I don't know if by protect myself and my heart, or more like, I don't know if the darkness of mankind deserves my hope and courage, which again is very bitter and cynical to do. And
there's nothing bitter or cynical about this movie.
No. And that is the diametric change, because Batman vs. Superman is very bitter and cynical. And they were like, well, people don't want bitter and cynical. Wonder Woman's right there. We can stop. With just mere words, we can fix bitter and cynical in Wonder Woman, because it would only come out at the end. So they just in that choice, they decided to revoke bitter and cynical, which means revoking half of motivation in Batman vs. Superman, a movie that people don't really like, but there's a chance that they can like this one. And
I'm glad she got off of that airplane, Chad. I'm glad that she was able to get a hold of her luggage and get off that airplane.
Hey, all that matters is she got off the airplane. That's all that matters now.
With the God Killer.
With her new God Killer. She lost his first one.
Another interesting thing. So, Chad, as we sit at this point in time, there is a Justice League movie set to come out in November. Mm-hmm. People actually like this Wonder Woman, and will probably really, really like this Wonder Woman, if not love this Wonder Woman, coming out of of this movie and going toward Justice League. So where are we in this grand scheme of things? Like, where are we on the roadmap of the DCEU?
So last time we talked about that, I kept saying that, you know, Wonder Woman's going to be the one. People are going to like it. And then they just have to get through Justice League. And I still feel that way. But Justice League now has this new shroud of uncertainty over it.
Justice League has a tinge of sadness around it, because this is no longer like, gee, I wonder what's going to happen to Zack Snyder's career after this is over. It's now, this is over, and he is no longer going to be a part of this, and you know, he extended his first look deal, and he'll get more opportunities to work with Warner Brothers, because they're going to want to. And, you know, Joss will take over now for a little while for just this reshoot process, which won't be very lengthy. I mean, these will not be the Rogue One reshoots.
No.
But, you know, it's kind of like, hey, I've poured 8 years of my life into this, and now all of a sudden it's gone. And it's gone for a very personal reason that I had to share, because if I didn't, people were just going to assume I got fired.
Yeah, the whole situation is just tough. But
because we all knew it was coming. Well, I mean, we didn't know that end of it was coming. But, like, we all knew he was going to be...
He's done after this one.
Yeah, he was done on... He was going to have to walk away from all this. And it wasn't like, you know, a situation with, like, Favreau, where, like, he walked away to go do Cowboys and Aliens, a project he was actually passionate about. You know, he walked away gratefully and came... You know, was actually in Iron Man 3 as Happy Hogan. So, you know, it's not like one of those situations where it's like, I'm still going to be an executive producer on these movies and have an integral role. And it's like, no.
You may get a producer credit, but, I mean, that's about it. So yeah, with that whole situation and taking all the personal stuff out of it, which is just terrible, and you wouldn't wish that on anybody.
No, because it goes to some deeply personal places that, you know, that really deal with the implications of them being humans.
Yes.
You know, we sit here and we take shots at people, and we make fun of people, and we say mean things about people when they make a movie that we don't like. And we don't stop to think about the fact that they're human beings with thoughts and feelings and emotions and aspirations of artistic design. I mean, we've said on this podcast many times before, no one sets out to make a bad movie. And everybody has an artistic vision, and everybody has a idea of what they want to do. And, you know, when something like this happens and you stop to think about logically the amount of time, energy, and effort that he had to give to these projects of his over the last 8 years, and his wife, who's been an executive producer, who's been a producing partner with him on all of them, so she's poured just as much of her time and attention and focus into this creative process and this creative endeavor, and the amount of time that takes away from the home front and doing the things that he would want to do. And, you know, it's a reminder that these people also sacrifice things and time with their families and, you know, miss ball games and things like that to participate in these creative endeavors, which, yes, they're going to get rewarded for handsomely, but they're still sacrificing something vitally important to them to make their art. And that we need to kind of to keep that in mind when we, you know, criticize Michael Bay for making Transformers the last night.
You're right. You're right. You said my trigger word, Michael Bay, but you're right. So I'll leave it at that. But as far as the movie goes, with this change, no one should expect Justice League to like change overnight. It's still going to be a Zack Snyder movie.
The trailer shows that.
Yes.
There will be some rewrites done by Whedon.
And he was already on board for that.
And he will shoot those and frame those in a certain way.
Mm-hmm. And then they'll just finish making, editing the movie.
Which, I mean, it's June, basically, and that's November.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's like 5 months.
Yeah, so they'll be editing from now until probably
October 1st.
Yeah. Hey, my birthday. And then the movie will come out, and I'm interested to see the reception now, because it's a Zack Snyder movie. Automatically, I think it's going to be divisive, because that's what they all are. However,
except for 300. 300 is pretty much just universally, that's pretty okay.
And then, like, you know, his early stuff, I think what he did, from Dusk to Dawn, I think a lot of people like that.
No, that's the Dawn of the Dead remake.
That one, okay.
In 04, with James Gunn, who wrote the script for that.
Ah, I knew he did one of those. I didn't know it was that one. But all of his comic movies outside of 300 have been divisive. I expected this one to be the same way. However, does the specter of Whedon coming in, does it soften people's thoughts about it? Also, well, we've seen how tragedies around movies tend to
engender goodwill.
Yeah, like look at the Fast movies, the one where Paul Walker died, and I think The Dark Knight had some of this to some extent. So, will this tragedy like at least soften people's hearts enough where they're like, they're going more willing to accept the movie. And if they like it or not is one thing, but if they go in...
Or does it become more of a thing where it's like, we know what this is going to be. We're prepared for it. We understand what it's going to be. And we can, we're both mutual, both parties are ready to move on. Snyder's ready to move on to, you know, healing and focusing on his family and doing the things that he needs to do to rebuild and repair his life and his heart and his family. And fanboys are ready to move on to a new creative direction for the DC universe.
Yes, and after seeing this movie and seeing the...
which, this movie is the first of that Geoff Johns as Jesus Christ, Savior of mankind.
Yeah. Yeah, this is the first official one. So I've seen this movie and then seeing what they've started working on
with Aquaman.
Seeing the people that are trying to go after for Man of Steel 2. For the Flash. Suicide Squad, who they have on for the Batman.
Who they have on for Birds of Prey. Or Gotham City Sirens. We're going to keep making that mistake because they're pretty much the same story.
To me, they're interchangeable. I don't know other people are. They're separate things. But with all that, it looks like they have a clear direction. Justice League is the only thing in their way. And they just... At this point, it just needs to set up people, bring back Superman, and that's about it.
I mean, and there was a poster at one of the events this past weekend that had Superman on the Justice League poster, which is a step in the right direction. So, I mean, we're getting closer and closer to not having to actually act like that's a...
It's not a secret because they brought him out at Comic-Con. And in that Comic-Con picture, Superman's there.
And the dirt rises off the grave.
Everybody has said that he's there. It's just when they've started showing us stuff, like actual trailers and moving footage, they don't want to put Superman in. And that's fine. There could be a myriad of reasons why he could only be in the movie for 5 minutes, or they really just want to save him.
So where are we at the point at this point in time? What is that break gonna do between of almost a year between Justice League and Aquaman? What is that going to do? What does that time period look like for the DCEU?
It depends on Justice League. If the break was between Wonder Woman and Aquaman, like if Wonder Woman came out in November and then we didn't have Aquaman until the next December, I think if it was that, it wouldn't be a problem because people are going to like this movie and they're going to leave with a good taste in their mouth. If Justice League comes out and people hate it, then there's this rotten taste in their mouth. They know, but a lot of them will know that things are getting better because we've seen Wonder Woman and we know it's on the other side. But now we just have to wait, and they still just have this bitter aftertaste in their mouth. So it'll probably be like what we had between Suicide Squad and Wonder Woman, which was a lot of people just... It probably won't be as bad because...
lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth?
Yeah, but it won't be as bad because people have seen Wonder Woman and...
They know that there's hope.
Yeah. Between Suicide Squad and this, they didn't know they had hope. You were just really just hoping.
And there was nothing but bad news coming.
Yeah, and there was nothing but bad news coming. But this is like, okay, we have hope. We have seen it. Now we just have to sit here and wait for it.
So, Chad, your final thoughts on a Wonder Woman franchise, where we stand, and what you would like to see in a potential Wonder Woman sequel? Assuming that, you know, she's only going to be only promised to be in Justice League.
Yeah. I've heard Gal talk. I think she loves this character. And besides just loving the character, I think she realizes...
She embodies it.
She does embody it now, and I think she realizes the opportunity she has with it. So if they want to make more movies, I think she's going to be set up for it. I would like to see her in another Wonder Woman movie.
Where do you place it? Do you place it in the present? Do you go back and do the World War II story?
I wouldn't do World War II just because, you know, they're already the Cap comparison. So now you're really pushing up against Cap comparisons. I don't know if I would set it in the past again.
Well, you now have the new reconstructed canon where she was around for every big event in the last 150 years.
Yep, and it's a convenient way to have her have a standalone story and not have to tie into everything else. But there's a part of me that wants to see her do stuff now. And I kind of hope that they do that now and go off of some of her more contemporary stories. And it's partially because I'm reading Wonder Woman, the new Wonder Woman series right now. And it's also partially because I don't know any other Wonder Woman villains. I like to see the whole thing with Cheetah. And in the story there is now, like, they have a past beyond just Wonder Woman beating the snot out of her. And I think that that's an interesting thing for them to do if they did it that way, since it would be a whole another a sister kind of thing. How to a sister kind of thing that goes bad kind of thing. So
yeah, but then you're butting up against the Winter Soldier.
You could, but the way the series does it now, it's not so much of a corruption or a brainwashing. It's a choice. It's a choice by Cheetah. And it's how Diana plays off of that and how she feels about it. So, yeah, I would like to see it in modern times, but I'm not going to, like, cry if they decide to, you know, keep bringing her back in the past. Because I see the value in that and telling these standalone stories and not having to really tie it into anything else, because you're free from that.
All right. So that'll about do it. We loved this movie. We hope that it does really, really well. Not just for the DCEU's sake, but for the sake of female-led superhero movies in general.
Yes, you all should go see it.
Yes, twice. Go support it. Go give Warner Brothers your money. And let's all enjoy and bask in the fact that after all this time, we finally got a female-led superhero movie, and it was good.
It was good.
So, if you want to keep up with this podcast, you can follow us on Twitter. I am at BCW Tiger Fan.
And I'm at The Mets Theory.
Thank you very much, and have a pleasant evening.